Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of Adani Green Energy Limited, we welcome you all to the FY22 earnings call. From the company, on the call we have with us Mr. Sagar Adani, Executive Director, Kaushal Shah, CFO, Rajkumar Jain, Head of Business Development, Mr. P.L. Chockalingam, Finance Controller, and Mr. Viral Rawal, Lead of Investor Relations. This, I would like to hand this over to Mr. Kaushal Shah for the presentation, post which the AGEL team will be available for Q&A. Kaushal bhai, over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Pritha, for introducing the management team. And thank you and warm welcome to all the participants in this earning call of Adani Green Energy Limited for the financial year ended on 31st March 2022. We have uploaded the earning presentation on our website and we hope that you would have had sufficient time to go through the same. Let me walk through some of the recent updates followed by an overview of our operational and financial performance. First, I will take on the capacity growth. So on a year-on-year basis, the operational capacity has increased by 56% to 5410 megawatt. In addition to this, you know, there is a 1279 megawatt which is partially commissioned. So for all practical purpose, capacity commission is 6688 megawatt, and the run rate EBITDA for this capacity which is commissioned is 5,800 crore rupees. I repeat, the run rate EBITDA for this commission capacity of 6688 megawatt is 5,800 crore rupees. And then net debt as we speak is 38,011 crore rupees. So one of the parameters which you know my debt investors friends wanted is that what is the net debt to run rate EBITDA, which is 6.61% as on 31st March. Now all of you are aware that you know we have a strategic investment from ISC Abu Dhabi based international holding company, and you know they are investing $500 million as a primary capital in the AGEL. And the extraordinary general meeting we had on 3rd of May, and you know the resolution is approved. The funding is also expected in next 1 week. So if we count these 3850 crore rupees, then this run rate, net debt to run rate EBITDA will come down to 5.93. So this is a huge, you know, change in the overall, which we have, you know, told to the many investors friend that our, over the period as we move forward, as more and more capacity comes into operational and, this primary issuance, you know, net debt to run rate EBITDA will come down. Moving forward. Then another important aspect is, you know, increase in the revolving construction facility. During the last quarter, AGEL has raised $288 million construction facility, thereby increasing the total construction rollover pool to $1.64 billion. The extended pool of liquidity strengthened the AGEL strategy to fast-track the development of its under-construction asset portfolio. The facility is green loan certified by ISS, ESG, and will have a significant contribution towards UN SDG 7, Affordable and Clean Energy, and SDG 13, which is climate action. So this is again in line with we are communicating that we have a fully funded growth plan, and this is the rollover construction facility help us to achieve that. Now I shall brief you about our progress and important milestones. In line with our commitment and well ahead of our initial goal, 100% of AGEL operational capacity is now single-use plastic-free. AGEL has also featured in CDP India Disclosure Report 2021 as the only company in India in renewable sector disclosing greenhouse gases emissions in all the three scopes. And reaffirming the ESG commitment, AGEL has won the Golden Peacock Award for Sustainability for the year 2021 in renewable energy capacity. Apart from these, as conveyed, we had a board structure, majority of consist of independent directors, and now our audit committee is also comprising of all independent directors. So this is again in line of commitment on the governance part. Now I shall brief you about our operational and financial performance. The robust capacity addition and best-in-class O&M process have led to a continued impressive operational and financial performance. Coming to the numbers for the financial year 31st March 22, solar CUF has improved by 130 basis points year on year to 23.8%, and wind CUF has improved by 400 basis points year on year to 30.8%. Solar CUF improvement is backed by integration of the high quality SB Energy portfolio, consistent high plant availability of near to 100%, and improved grid availability of 99%. Similarly, wind CUF improvement is backed by technologically advanced and more efficient newly added wind turbine generators, improved plant availability of 97%, improved grid availability of 100%, and also the wind speed. Sale of energy has increased by 72% to 9426 million units. This is backed by the robust addition of 1940 megawatt renewable capacity over the last 1 year. This is for 5410 megawatt. If you add for 1279 megawatt, there is a short-term power sale which is going on currently, and this has added further units in this. Supported by the strong operational performance, EGL's revenue also from the power supply has increased 56% year on year to 3,783 crores. The EBITDA from the power supply has increased 60% year on year to 3,530 crores, and EBITDA margin has also improved by 120 basis points to 91.8%. The cash profit has increased by whooping 48% to 1854 crores. So all in all, in conclusion, the last fiscal year has been very eventful for us. We successfully completed the acquisition of the high-quality SB Energy portfolio, which has been truly value-accretive, as evident in the overall improvement in operational performance and further strengthening of the counterparty profile. At the same time, we have fulfilled our commitment to fast-track greenfield renewable capacity development. Further, we are aiming to integrate newer technologies that will improve the efficiency of power generation while also lowering the cost of electricity. In financial 22, we have made considerable progress on the ESG front also, as communicated to you earlier. So all in all, it's a good eventful year with the good performance, good set of numbers. Thank you so much for patiently hearing. Now the floor is open for the question answers. There is a first question is that, as per them, how do we arrive at the net debt to EBITDA to 6.61% compared to, for somehow their calculation is 15x. So I don't know from where this number has came, but let me just take you through the numbers, what we have and how we have arrived at 6.61x. So if you look at the balance sheet, published balance sheet, there is a gross debt of 48,171 crores. And that includes the trade debt, which is a short term in nature, which is an LC of 6,294. So as per the bond documents, we are required to remove that document because date, because there is an underlying assets also available. And from that, we have to reduce the cash balance which is available of 3,866 crore rupees. So accordingly, the net debt which is coming is 38,011. And then, as I mentioned to you, our reported capacity is 5410, but there is a partial capacity commission of 1279 megawatt. So if you include that, that will come to 6688 megawatt. And if you look at the run rate EBITDA on that, it's 5,753 crores. So if you divide 38,011 That is a debt, a net debt. And then if you divide the run rate EBITDA on a capacity of 6688 megawatt of 5753 crore, then it comes to 6.61. So that is how this 6.61 number comes. And then, as also communicated further, we are in the process of issuing primary equity of to the ISC of Abu Dhabi, and that we will be having a cash of 3,850. So the net debt will be further reduced from 38,000 crore by that amount, and accordingly the revised net debt to run rate EBITDA will be 5.93%. I hope this clarifies the, you know, the both the questions.
And I think then an additional question was, if the SoftBank acquired assets are consolidated, the answer is yes. And yes, they are. And they contribute an additional EBITDA of about 1,100 crores per annum, the operating capacity of the SoftBank assets. And those numbers have been considered in the numbers that Kaushal Bija shared over the phone. I think there was another question, that the operational capacity has remained broadly unchanged in the second half, and the reason as to what the reason behind that was, I think Kaushal Bhai covered it in his opening remarks, that while we have added significant capacity, due to various techno-legal reasons, we have not declared them as being legally commissioned, although they are technically running fully, completely, and are selling to the exchange at very, very good prices on the short-term market, and generating revenue and EBITDA as well as we speak. So there has actually been a significant capacity addition. It's just that legally it's not been added to the official number because of various small technical reasons here and there. We will also be issuing a compliance certificate for the Holdco bond soon, which will cover all of these aspects and clearly bring out the ratios and the numbers that that are very comfortable and within range of what we've committed.
The next question comes from Love Sharma. Your line's now open. You may proceed with your question.
Hello. Hi, Sagar. Hi, Kaushal. Hi. Thanks for the call. Just two or three questions from me. So first one on the, you mentioned that some of the capacity, which is 1.3 gigawatt about, is not legally commissioned as of now. Can you just elaborate a bit more what is pending there? And you also mentioned that the these are operating, like, you know, generating revenues. So if you could also highlight for FY22, what is the amount of revenue you recognize from these assets?
So, Love, Sagar here. I'll just take a question on the reason why these capacities are not legally declared as commissioned is because, as a part of the PPA, there are some of these are hybrid assets. Actually, most of these. So the solar and wind capacities have to become operational in proportion to be able to declare them as legally legally commissioned. But we have a lot of, let's say, for example, solar capacity already already running, and a part of the wind capacity that is expected to be a full wind capacity to be expected to be finished in the next 10 to 15 days. So in this meantime, what we do is not let these capacities sit idle, but instead run, operate, dispatch to the grid, and generate revenue on a short-term basis. So that is what these assets have done. We've generated a total revenue of about 540 crores, which is roughly about $75 to $80 odd million in this financial year from these assets, which are operating but not legally declared as commissioned. To your second question of both your questions.
Yeah, you answered. Thanks. I think. Thanks. So just one more follow-up, if I can have. In terms of the capex plan going forward, if you could highlight, I think if I remember correctly, the plan is to have close to around 20,000 odd crores annually. And you currently, let's say, whatever cash balance you have, you also mentioned about the revolving line, $1.56 billion. And then you have this equity raise. So if you could just tie it up, how much of this will help you to fund the equity portion of these projects going forward? Because I'm not sure as to how much of the capacity, how much of the line is utilized already. I know the equity money is going to come in, so that will be fresh money. But just to understand if everything is tied up on the equity side.
Yeah, thank you, Lux. I think it's a good question. Let me just take you through, as I covered in my opening remarks, for FY23 for the equity issuance, we are raising $500 million through the Abu Dhabi IHC holding. So that will contribute around 3,850 crore rupees. Then you are aware that we have already a limit credit rating approved for $1.7 billion for the Holdco bond. And till now, we have only raised $750 million. So we have, the limits available to raise further $500 million in this year. So we may be the later part of the year, as and when the equity required, we have that flexibility available to use that. Over and above, there will be a FCFE, which will be available to us, will be roughly around 1,000 crores to us. This is net of payment to the Total. So that also, because there are capacity which will become operational and we will be able to upstream many of the, the operational for surplus available from the SPV. So that we are going to do it. And then we expect there will be a refinancing of some of the projects which is happening. So that will be roughly contributing around 80-90 million. So all in all, we have a sufficient cash equity generated available for taking care of our capex requirement of FY23, and similarly beyond also the same model we will be following it up.
Okay, and is my estimate correct in terms of capex which you're looking to do should be around 20,000 odd crore for the next few years?
Yeah, so what you are saying is right.
Okay. And so, Kaushalya, if I can just ask you, so in terms of the equity portion, you will need close around 5,000 crore, let's say, right, assuming 25% mix. So for this 5,000 crores, you, let's say this one-time equity is 30,800 crores.
I have given a breakup of total 8,700 crores.
Right, okay. So that includes this equity plus the bond issuance, correct?
Yeah. So bond, if required, okay, we will be able to do it. I mean, it's nothing but,
Love to clarify, this 8,000 crores is the sources of equity that we have available for us. In addition, right, for the various refinancings that we will do and the additional capex debt that we will take via the revolving construction facilities, that will be in addition, and that will follow that roughly 10 to 15,000 crore number per year that we will raise from the external markets.
Understood. And Sagar, can I clarify, the currently this facility is unutilized, this $1.56 billion?
No, so 1.56 billion, about 1.1 billion odd of that is utilized, and the balance odd million is available to us, and we are looking to probably enhance that a little bit further this year when the requirement for new greenfield projects capex comes up in a couple of months.
So that's clear now.
In our overall program, we have a planning of taking the greenfield project capex construction facility to about $2.5 to $3 billion in total. So we that is the peak level of construction that we would require. Of course, not this year, but in a couple of years of time. So maybe I think sometime next year or the year after is when we hit the peak. At which time it will be $2.5 to $3 billion.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
We have flexibility of taking it up to that level.
Got it. Understood. Very clear. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next text question from O Jin Ching from HPS. When will the company is publishing the compliance certification for Holds CO, RG1 and RG2?
We'll be publishing the compliance certificates for that in the next 2 to 3 weeks maximum. So about 15 days, we should be able to publish that.
Thank you.
But we are fully compliant of all the covenants which we have promised in RG1 and RG2, just to add what Sagar Bhai has told.
Thank you. We have our next question from Eric Liu from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks management for taking my question. Actually, I referring to the restricted group. I saw from the PowerPoint slides 33. So your kind of sell electricity is down by 1% year over year, but it seems like your EBITDA is dropping around 10% and your revenue dropping by 5% compared to like LG1, it seems to be at a similar scale. So would like to hear from you what's happening on this LG2 regarding the EBITDA draw.
So I think the performance of RG2 is broadly in line with our expectations. We don't see any reason for any EBITDA drop or any significant difference in terms of how we see the performance compared to how we've committed as per the bond documents. But generally speaking, I mean, I'm sorry if I did not get your question correctly, but generally speaking, of course, when newer RG groups are issued, then because the tariffs are lower, the EBITDA contribution per megawatt naturally reduces, but so does the capex and debt. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, if you're looking for something else specifically.
I think like because I saw the EBITDA is dropping like 10% compared to LG1, I think they're kind of a drop in sale of energy, also just maybe a similar 1%, but it seems like LG2 is dropping 10% EBITDA, but LG1 is kind of just 2-3. So I just not sure why it makes such a discrepancy.
So there's in RG2 there's a component of VGF, the viability gap funding, that is also supposed to come in as a part of the revenues from the government. So the VGF component does not come in a straight line. It typically varies from on a half yearly basis. So sometimes it comes through more of it together, sometimes it doesn't come through for 6-8 months and then comes all of it together. So the difference you see is because of the difference in the availability of the VGS. That's what defines it, but it is always made up on a year and a half basis. So the next line that you will see more VGF coming in. So the revenue from the sale of energy that you will see in the fourth box on the same slide, you will see that the revenue is constant. It's 13-13 versus 13-28, so it's almost the same number.
Okay, got it.
So the assets are performing perfectly well, and the revenues from operations are perfect. There's a component of VGF which gets shifted from a timeline point of view, which anyways comes through. So that's what the difference is.
So this VGF thing, like as you mentioned, there is a time lag. What do you expect? There is any shortfall in the VGF can come in the next quarter or something?
So normally it is expected that by before year end, by March quarter, in the quarter of first quarter of calendar year, we expect this VGF to come. But sometime it spill over to the Q2 of a calendar year, which will be the Q1 of the next financial year, current financial year. So because of that, we only account based on the actual receipt VGF. We do not do on an accrual basis, and because of that, this variation has happened. But as rightly mentioned by Sagar bhai, if you look at the million units, which are the similar to what we had in the earlier years also.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from Sheeran from Lumis. The line is now open. Please proceed with your question.
Oh, hi, management. Yeah, I want to follow up on that operational but not publicly declared commission part. So is there any revenue from these assets in the FY22 results so far? Because I noticed there's a significant rise in sales of goods and services. So can I ask what is that?
So we have generated revenue of close to $80 million, which is 540 crore rupees roughly. Now this is, as per the accounting standard, this is not part of my profit and loss. It is part of my capex. So capex will be reduced to that extent. So that is how the treatment in the accounts are given. But we have generated revenue of roughly $80 million.
I see. Okay. And then what is the sales of goods, which is almost like 12 billion rupiah by FY22?
No. So sale of goods is because, Adani Green is acting as a EPC contractor. So it procures all the material and it supplies to, to its subsidiaries because it works as an EPC contractor. And this is for some tax benefits which is available if the Adani Green acts as an EPC contractor. So accordingly, that revenue is coming up.
I see. Okay. My second question is, what is the receivable situation now? And then how does that change compared to last 6 months or last year?
So receivable, we are happy to tell you that for all SECI and NTPC projects, we are absolutely current on the receivable. And there is not a single day delay. In fact, we have to shell out the rebate if they pay above before the due dates. While in case of Tamil Nadu and Telangana, where these two state DISCOMs had a longer duration of receivable, which was of 7 months, but I am happy to report that in April month we have received almost $60 million from the Tamil Nadu. So that makes Tamil Nadu DISCOMs receivable absolutely current, which is 1.5 months now. And for Telangana DISCOMs, we have received the full, including the late payment surcharge. So, now as we speak in April, all the DISCOMs receivables are current.
Okay, I see. My last question is still regarding your capacity plan, because I remember after the September results, management was saying by March that you could reach 8 gigawatt operational. So even if you add back those special assets, you're still like 6.7 gigawatts. So I just want to know, what is there any change of plan, and how should we expect going forward this year and next year that in terms of your ramping up your pipeline projects?
So against the 8 gigawatts that we've said, we've been able to achieve 7.2 gigawatts as the capacity that is operating today technically, but for various reasons we are not able to legally announce, which we will very soon. But from a revenue and EBITDA point of view, our operating capacity today is 7.2 gigawatts. We're expecting that quantum to go up to about somewhere between 9 to 9.5 gigawatts in the next year, and a similar capacity addition in the year after that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from Abhishek Rathi from T. Rao Price. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. You can hear me, right?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay, fantastic. So just to, a quick follow-up on the current kind of project finance lines that you're getting onshore. Is there an indicative rate that you can give us as to what is the funding cost that you have been raising onshore, at least in the last couple of months or so?
So for onshore, we have recently, done the issuance of the NCD bond, which we could do it at 7.72%. And, other than that, just to give you highlight, at the time of greenfield development, we have a letter of credit facility available at the Holdco level, which is at Adani Green level, whereby we open the LC and that gets discounted. So overall cost for the LC opening and the discounting for us is 5 to 5.5%. So this LC is almost run up to 9 to 12 months. And then by the time we have a project finance loan available, which on a fully hedged basis, for example, our construction facility, on a fully hedged basis, our cost is around 9%. to 9.2%. So that's how this is in the range in which we are getting the funding. But if you consider the LC cost plus this cost, then the weighted average cost will be a lower, which will be around in the range of around 8%.
Understood. And so when you say the project finance 9 to 9.2%, this is the same as your revolving construction facility, right?
Yes.
Okay, understood. The other question I had was around the cash balance. So if I just look at your kind of abridged balance sheet, I see about 16 billion of cash and 5 billion of investments. Can you just guide us to, are there any other components that you're including in your 38 billion cash number, and where are they in the balance sheet lines?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there are certain amounts which is part of the investment schedule. So that is, some amount is parked into the liquid funds. So that is being covered as a part of cash balance. So it is not a, you know, as per the accounting standard, this is not shown as cash and the bank balances, but it is part of my investment schedule. Under total current assets, you can see that.
Right. So the investment part I see around 5 billion. Are there some other investments like in other current assets or some other kind of plus?
And then there is a DISRA also available, which we put it at that, which is under Schedule 8. So what I will do is that, you know, I can send you that references, so tell you this amount on a mail separately.
That will be very helpful. Thank
yeah,
you very much.
Yeah, sure, sure. I will do that. Okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. We have our next question from Srinath Daga from Barclays. Your line's now open. You may proceed with your question.
Hi. Thank you, management, for the presentation. I have just one question. So the amount of 500 million that IHC is injecting into Adani Green, so do we have a number of how much would go into CAPEX and how much would go into deleveraging? Just some broad numbers. Yeah, thanks.
So from our point of view, we are expecting a majority of it to go into funding the capital needs for growth and some of it to go for deleveraging. While the exact numbers are something that we're not in a position to share right now, but you can consider quite a majority of it to go into investments into growth assets and some of it used being used for deleveraging of the existing balance sheet.
Okay, sure. Thank you. That's it for me.
Thank you. We have our next question from Jocelyn Chang from Amundi. The line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you all for the presentation and the session. I wanted to have a question on the RG. Can you explain how the CUF performance is for RG1? Because if I look at the generation volume based on the compliance certificate last year, it seems to suggest that this year, while the performance is relatively steady, but it seems to be off P90 generation. Could you clarify on this one?
So thank you. You know, if you look at the RG1, we have, you know, there is a marginal reduction. If you look at the sale of energy units in RG1 in page 32 of our presentation, in FY21, which was 1,908 units, this time it is 1,892 units. So it is almost similar to the, but in some of the cases, you know, in RG1, there was a lower radiation because of the extended monsoon in that particular area, and because of that, there is a marginal reduction in the generation.
Right. Thank you. So, am I right to say that it is slightly off P90?
Yeah, we RG1 is performing around P90. You are right. And RG2,
okay,
it is P75.
Thank you. Next one is on the receivable side. Thank you for the explanation on the group level. Well, now I'm looking at RG1. I am seeing some increase in receivable positions for UPPCL, KREDEL, and PFPCL. Which DISCOM is this one from? Which state, please? And why are we seeing some elongation of receivable data?
So, you know, there are one thing is that for the Punjab, we are expecting this receivable because there is a change in the, you know, the local government and, you know, we are expecting this payment to be received in this Q1 of the current financial year. And same is with the HESCOM. We are getting, though there is a delay in the payment, but in the month of April also we have received the payment from HESCOM, so we do not see any challenges both from the, you know, the Karnataka receivable and the Punjab receivable.
So UPPCL is from which state, please? Sorry.
So UPPCL is in Uttar Pradesh, but yeah, there you can see that you know, we are absolutely on RG1. If you look at this, we have only, you know, 0 to 60 days is 3 crores, which is there. So, and due is only 3 crores. So, which is in line with the, you know, our PPA agreement.
Okay, so the elongation in the Karnataka state discount, you are saying that they have already started to make payments, is it?
Yeah, so they have some disbursement they were expected to receive, and we have received partial payment in the month of April from Karnataka government.
Oh, yeah, thank you. So Karnataka, what's the issue there in Karnataka? Yeah, what's the issue with Karnataka, if I may ask?
No, so primarily...
It's just a little bit of a liquidity issue at the end of the discounts, and they're expected to probably file orders for increasing some of their tariffs, which should resolve this for them. But from as they get the funding from the state government, they start to disburse the funds to our companies. So we've got partial funds from them, and we're expecting the balance. I mean, we're following up with them consistently. We hope to be able to get it through with them in the near future.
Thank you. And on the Punjab
we don't expect this to become a problem for us.
Right, thank you. Just Punjab side, is there any issue with the change in local government? Because previously there was talk about, you know, attempt to renegotiate XPA and all those stuff. Anything that you're seeing on the ground?
I mean, there is always this bravado, you know, from at which are more of political talks than anything else. So as you might be aware, Jocelyn, already there have been a few attempts in the past of various state governments trying to renegotiate the tariffs, and it has been consistently struck down by the Supreme Court of India. So the legal jurisprudence for that is already established, and hence, you know, at the end of the day, everyone knows that they can't do anything about a PPA that is once signed. We don't expect there to be any problem. Rather, we are confident that there will not be any problem. But it's more just you know, political positioning than anything else.
Okay, so whatever the delays there in Punjab is really because of maybe administratively there is some change in local government and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yes, correct. It's a little bit of a like a disconnect and a shift because regimes change and, you know, new people are stabilizing in their new roles. But we expect this to get resolved very soon as well.
Okay.
But if you see if you see Jocelyn from an overall RG1 point of view, I do want to highlight though that from a portfolio basis, RG1, the receivables are very much under control and within the range of what we have committed in our bond documents, and we feel pretty comfortable with that. Of course, there's small issues with one or two discounts here or there, which we continue to follow very closely. But from an overall point of view, we are in a very comfortable position as far as receivables go.
Sure, thank you. Is there anything you can guide us in terms of DSO there in RG1? Still within the... Sorry, I need to check, but...
sorry?
That would be great.
Sorry, can you repeat your question?
Just to understand, what is the DSO at RG1 for FY22? Is that something that can be shared at this point?
Days of sales, FY22. Yeah, so Jocelyn, basically, if you look at the overdue amount, it is only 30 days of sales.
Okay. That's helpful. And I guess for receivable days for the RG2, that remains pretty healthy. Right.
Yeah, RG2 is very low. I mean, it's negligible.
It's only due amount is only 2 crores. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. That's all from me. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. We have our follow-up question from Love Sharma from Lombard Audio. The line is now open. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, hi, thanks. Just one quick follow-up. Kaushal, if you can help me understand the EBITDA, the run rate EBITDA you mentioned, is that based on P90, P75 kind of estimate?
Yeah, so this is based on the P90.
P90, okay, got it.
Yeah.
And another question, looking at your margins, especially from FY22 to FY21, there seems to be a decline quite significant on the EBITDA margin side. In fact, if I just look at the revenue which you added this year and the EBITDA you added, your margin should be close to around 60%, which seems to be pretty low compared to, you know, let's say even some of the peers. What is this driven by, if I can understand?
So if you look at this overall margin compared to last year, we had a 91% EBITDA margin, and this year we are ending up with 92% margin. So there is an improvement. Having said that, when we acquired the SB Energy, we had some solar park charges, which, you know, we are required to pay, which is higher compared to, you know, because we don't have to shell out the charges in case of our own assets which we were owning. But when we acquired the SB Energy, there are some assets are operating in the solar park, and that's where the charges are a bit higher. And that may be, you know, overall, there is a marginal reduction in that sense.
I see. I mean, my estimate seems to be a bit off on the margin side. I hope I'm calculating them correctly. Maybe I can...
What I can do is that, you know, if you can share with us, you know, your calculation or offline, what I will do is that we will share our calculation of EBITDA margin.
Yes.
And then we can reconcile, you know, both of that. That's not a problem.
Perfect. Yeah, that will be very useful. Thanks.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask any further question, you may do so by pressing star followed by 1 on your telephone keypad now. And if you've joined us via web browser, kindly press the Q&A button and type in your question.
So if there is no further question, we can end this call. And, you know, we all are very thankful for your participation on the call. And if you have any questions, moving forward, you know, you can write to our IR department. We have Bala and the Viral. Both are available, and to me directly also, so that we can respond to you immediately. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for your time.